Welcome back, everybody, to another Full Tank Motorcycle Podcast. I'm joined, as always, by the wonderful Tim of Rarified Road and Urban Rider
Tim.
And Motorbob fame.
Yeah. I span loads of different platforms. Nice to see you again.
And this one. You're spanning this one as well. It's great to see your flexibility on show again. Now, I thought we'd start with a little catch-up of how we've been doing, but you've got a bit of a tale of woe, haven't you?
Yeah, I do. Yeah. I will give you the fastest version that I can. I'm getting quicker with every retelling of it. So basically, we went out for a lovely day on Friday riding bikes. We were on the Norton Commando. It was a great day. And then I had to leave you to ride 2 hours, 100 miles back to my place, and then found that my bike was bogging down on the front. My initial thought was that it might have a flat. So I found myself a very convenient spot to pull in on the motorway. Luckily timed it just right so that there was actually one of those little pull-ins on those smart motorways. Tested the tire. I was like, no, that feels okay. And then my initial thought when I think I even mentioned it to you previous day, was maybe my brakes are locking on. Maybe they're binding and it's pushing against it. And the way to test that is to see if they're warm. Let me just use my hand. And essentially fried my hand like chicken.
It genuinely did look properly fried as well. I think it's probably one of the most graphic photos in my WhatsApp history. It's in the top five.
I've done the rounds with that. I sent that to everyone as well. Yeah, it's shocking, isn't it? I don't like the look of it.
It's the little circular bits of non-burnt meat that where the discs are drilled that are quite shocking to see. It looks a bit like, do you remember that Billy Bear ham that you used to get in Tesco?
Christ. Yeah, I do. Thanks.
A little bit like that.
Yeah, you've got, basically went white. It went instantly white on the areas that it touched. And you can tell all of the air with pure HD clarity what areas of my hand, fingers, touched the pad. And it was my index, my middle, and my ring finger. And it's great. Actually, it is healing quite nicely, better than I possibly thought it would. And one of my main frustrations was just the fact that I was so far from home, closer to you, obviously. And I knew it was going to be 2 hours before I could actually get cold water on it. Because I had to ride home with naught but a rear brake, because eventually got it rolling again. But I was like, well, I can't use my front brake now, so hopefully I don't need it. And then keep my fingers extended on the throttle because it was my right hand. Should have really burnt my left. That would have made the whole thing a bit easier. But yeah, well, hindsight.
All depends, doesn't it, really? Yeah. Are there any daily tasks that it's making more difficult?
All of them. You know the ones that we're talking about here, yeah. No, it does. And obviously the computer, my actual job, and editing and using computers is very irritating. But no, it seems to be actually healing better than I thought it was. So there's at least a positive in there.
Good times, mate. I think I've already said this to you, but if there's any consolation, I think it's in the fact that pretty much most bikers have done something similar, be it the brakes or more likely touching the headers or exhaust. I think I've done it on numerous occasions where I've seen a bit of dirt on the bike and then you touch it and then you're surprised that it's hot when it was obviously going to be hot. But yeah, I was thinking maybe we would share a picture of it on the Facebook group if you so wish, and then we can take a poll of how many people have actually done that, because I feel like it's one of those things as well. Hopefully you do it in private when you get home, you know, putting the bike in the garage. And you never have to tell anyone about it. You just can get on with your life, feel a little bit embarrassed in your own personal.
I do. I was just mad at myself. I was mad at the situation and more importantly, mad at the bike for putting me in that position. But, you know, my own fault for touching it. But I was absent-minded because I didn't know. It wasn't like I went, oh, it's definitely the brakes. Hold on, let me not touch them because they'll be too hot.
Yeah.
And I've blamed my dad, but he was the one that kind of, we've talked about, you know, like, that, you know, when you feel like something might be off, you're like, oh, maybe the brakes are gripping. And he's like, well, you'll know if the pads are hot. And I'm like, yeah, you will know. Instantly you will know.
Yeah.
Just absentmindedly, it was in the back of my mind. But I won't make that mistake twice, obviously.
It's a shame because it was a sour and burny end to an otherwise good day, because we got an unusually decent way of decent day of weather for January. And then also we had the commando out on a little you know, shoot, trying to get a video for my channel. Tim mainly rode the commando so I could stop and film him. And then I was on my Tiger 800. So it's a fun day out. Nice roads.
It was a great
good
day
weather.
Out. Yeah, first day in Chittagong Gorge. So that was nice to see. That impressed me. Mm. And then obviously the bike massively impressed me. And it is one that I've thought of in the past. And it's one that's definitely caught my eye and I was curious of. But obviously they had their problems.
Yeah.
So then you're like, well, I'm probably never going to get to ride one. And then they came back. And yeah, I'm glad to say that it lived up to expectations in that it's, and I've said this to you as well, it's a bike that's stuck with me quite long after the review. And I think that's a sign that it really is one that you, for whatever reason you liked it, is when you find yourself 2 days later just pining after it and be like, yeah, that was, yeah, it's sticking in the head.
And it's those soft words, isn't it? Like personality, character, soul.
Yes.
You know, it does all of those things really, really well. And I think that is probably what leaves that lasting effect, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah, no, well, it is actually, isn't it? Yeah. I mean, you can get on a bike and be technically impressed by it and how impressive it is. But the longevity of your feeling with it is a feeling. It sticks with you in that sense. And we've also said in terms of whether you would sort of look to buy it, logic doesn't buy that bike. Your heart buys that bike.
Yeah.
And it sounds cliche to say, but and it's a very hard thing to define, but you know it when you know it.
On paper, it is expensive for what you get in if you're purely a spec sheet warrior, as I am. It's a professional spec sheet warrior if you look at my YouTube channel. But yeah, 16 and a half grand for something that puts out less than 80 horsepower, 80 newton meters of peak torque. You know, those are similar figures to something like a Speed Twin 900 that was previously called the Street Twin, and that bike's 8 to 9 grand, I think, you know, nearly half the price.
Yeah.
And so it does look like, yeah, a lot of money, but it's the fact that it's air-cooled, pushrod, vibey. It's really quite loud for a standard exhaust
system. Set off your alarm when you did it near your car. It's that
set off the car alarm, revving it on the drive. And all those sorts of things that combine to make it. And also the visual package as well. It just looks incredible. It's
nothing else quite looks like it. I love the gold and black. And I think that one of the best angles is that tail section, that tail light and seat hump.
Yeah.
I mean, it is. It's great. And again, like we said on the day, it is a sensory experience. It is all of your senses, it is all of your senses because you can taste it.
We didn't taste it, but yeah, it's a delight for the ears. Both the exhaust note and the sort of sound of the engine as well. It's a little bit like, obviously, not the smoothest sounding engine because it's air cooled, so you don't have that sort of water jacket around it that brings the sound down a bit. It's got a bit of, vibes and sound to it. It feels good, like it's vibey. You feel like you're riding something special, maybe a little bit historic. It looks brilliant. What are the other ones? Wait, sound?
Have we gone through all the senses?
Smell.
Smell, you can definitely
it
smell.
It does smell good as well. It smells a little bit petrol-y, not in a necessarily like concerning way, but in quite a nice way. You know, the sort of metal polish, petrol-y kind of smell.
It's got a unique smell. And actually, that's one of the senses that more quickly sort of puts you in an era or, you know, in a memory.
Yeah, yeah.
It's a really sort of quick route to that. And actually, it's like when if I'm out riding with my dad and he's on his Monster 750, for example, riding behind it, it has got a smell to it where you're like,
Or is that your dad?
Sort of takes you there. Yeah, he smells of metal and grease and
that's not bad. It could be worse.
Yeah, it's a nice odor to come out with.
I think we both just came away from it feeling, I mean, I've had it for a couple of weeks. I rode it last year. We've got it on load now, but I just wanted a bit of a second opinion and almost someone else just to have the joy of experiencing it as well, because they're, you know, low volume, fairly rare bikes. So it probably, if I've got one for a couple of weeks, that's your best shot at riding one for some time probably. So it was just nice to go out and appreciate it. And you know, also it does go quite nicely. You've got great suspension, great brakes. It's a chassis that's set up to handle quite nicely.
It's a big contrast, isn't it, between the engine, which is, I think, not to be unfair, low performing, as in it's comfortably performing. It doesn't feel like it's strained because they haven't tuned it to a way that it feels strained, which is a good thing, because it doesn't feel frantic in any way. And then you've got, like, almost like someone has taken an original Norton not that I've ridden an original Norton, but, you know, an older bike, and they've uprated the suspension and brakes, which is something that you can do to old bikes. And, you know, it's got that, it just feels really planted. And when we got on the good stuff and it dried out a little bit, I loved it. It was great fun.
Yeah, it was a horrendous day of weather because there was a lot of rain the night before. So lots of debris on the roads, yeah. Lots of wet patches where there was, cover from the sun.
Yeah.
And also even some massive puddles. So there was a couple of moments, weren't there?
Yeah, there was this one, just that one corner, which we knew going out, you found it quickly. And then I noticed it less abruptly on the way back. But yeah, cold tires, standing water, inconsistent traction and stuff like that, where you can't really plan, you know, each corner is different. So not ideal, but we both of us just sort of relaxed into it. It's the only thing to do on a day like that is just relax and take it for what it is. And
I think I've also got to say as well, like, yeah, don't push it too much, but
no.
But also it doesn't, I'm almost backtracking on the power figures, but like, it doesn't feel slow to me certainly on relatively tight, twisty country roads. Maybe on big open roads, it might feel a bit underpowered, but it's not a boring bike to ride at all. There's lots of charm to it, and it has that real talkiness sort of in the mid range that just, yeah, there's plenty there. It's satisfying. It's fun. As for whether I'd actually buy one or not, I think that's a different question. I think it's a little bit out of my pocket, out of my budget, basically. But I don't know. What do you think, mate?
Yeah, it's the same as you. I think if I was realistically looking at it, I'm not in a position yet where I can buy a bike purely for fun. It needs to fulfill the practical needs that I have of a bike, and that wouldn't be my choice. But no, if I hypothetically had £16,500 and I was looking at that type of bike, and I definitely would be looking at that type of bike if I had some pocket money, that would be high on my list, actually, after having ridden it.
Yeah,
but
totally.
I think it takes having ridden it to experience it to then, because otherwise you're probably always going to be looking at, you know, what's the logical choice.
Yes, I think we're both dad bike owners because of our utilitarian needs and working on a bike and with a bike, you know, and traveling by motorcycle. Yeah, we both need something that's going to do the job. And again, you know, like, I feel the same as you. If I was looking for a weekend toy, and I'm not someone who does track days or really fast riding, I want something, maybe I'm a little bit of a nostalgic soul,
yeah,
or I want something that just looks cool as well and has that old school swagger to it, it's really got to be up there. And if you're thinking of buying something like a Bonneville but haven't sampled what a sort of more vibey and, yeah, the air cooled sort of vibe is like, then definitely check one out. In fact, I think I said the other day, it reminds me a bit of riding stuff like the air-cooled Harley Sportsters and how soulful and characterful those are. And then now they've moved over, some of the engines for me just don't really do that. I mean, certainly the Nightster, when I reviewed that last year, and the Sportster S, they feel like a KTM, like a Super Duke or something.
Right,
and
yes.
Not so much like, you know, what I think people loved about them, and yeah, you know, their hands been forced a little bit,
yeah,
by emissions regulations, but they just feel so much more like it's a living, breathing thing. And I sort of understand why people give their vehicles names and stuff when they've got like old air cooled bikes. Yeah. Although I don't do it myself.
No, never have either myself. Nope, just trying to remember if I'm lying to you all there. No, it definitely, of all the bikes that I've ridden, there are a few of them that do feel more, I mean, I'm not from that era. I don't know. It's, you know, my dad's era of riding a bike and it taking you back to, oh, this feels like my old bump, you know, insert bike here. And I've test ridden obviously new Bonnevilles and stuff, and in the comments you do get people going, oh, you really need to try the old one, you know, they are different. And this to me is the one, if I was to attribute that classic feeling in a really nice way to any bike that I've ridden, this probably has that the most. This has it in spades, and it's not a negative at all.
So in summary, I think a bit out of budget for us, but if you're well off and like characterful bikes, it has to be on the list. But that got me thinking whether there were bikes that you would consider buying this year, perhaps a little bit more in budget. So I tasked us both before we started the podcast with thinking of three retro bikes on the market in 2023 that we'd either recommend or like to take home and have in a sort of retro dream garage. Do you want to go first or me?
Yeah, no, I'll go first. I think you can probably guess. I mean, you know at least one of mine. I'd put money on it now.
I already do.
I'll hopefully surprise you a bit more with the first two. And my first pick, didn't even take me long to pick it, to think of these three, was the BMW R9T, because I borrowed it for an extended period last year. And I've always liked it. But when I say the Norton isn't a bike you buy, your head buys, the R9T absolutely is. And then the longer you live with it, then you start to sort of see the character and the worth in it. And it's also quite a good performer. I think people do know that it is, you know, it can perform really highly and it can keep up with the likes of a street triple. I've been out with my dad when he's on a street triple and I owned one. And I took it on the same sorts of roads and I can say I wouldn't have been any faster on that street triple because it has, you know, relatively high spec brakes, it has high spec suspension and stuff like that. And of those choices, probably the scrambler, but only because it's a bit more of an upright position. It just gives you a bit more visibility and leverage over the bike.
It is a brilliant bike. It has always surprised me as well, sort of how good the riding experience and handling is. And again, it's another kind of unusual bike where if you get the top spec one, it has like good componentry, lively chassis, and then an unusual engine, you know, that doesn't deliver power in a way that you necessarily think of if you're riding something that can hustle a bit. You know, you might be thinking of like V-twin or 270 parallel twin or an inline four or something like that in a naked bike. But that boxer twin, it shifts and it's a weird power delivery. It's very like super linear. It's got its own sound and feel, but it's so fun.
What's odd about it is how linear it is. That's one of the things that really surprised me about the R90, is I was expecting it to be a big sledgehammer V-twin. Sorry, not V-twin. Yeah. Flat twin.
Yes.
But, you know, have the same sort of power delivery as the likes of a V-twin. But it really didn't. It is, it's very consistent. And if you first get on it, some people might misread that as bland, and it's not the longer you live with it. But different to the other bikes that I was considering. And this isn't necessarily saying that you would want a garage of all three of them. It's just that it gives you different options to play with. And for me, the second one that really lives with me is the Triumph Scrambler 1200. And I can never remember which way around it is. The XE, I believe, the one with the taller suspension, yeah?
Yeah, I wish there was a way to remember it, but XE is tall. XC is the slightly more road-biased, lower-slung version. Yeah. But the XE is awesome, isn't it?
Yeah, I love, obviously, you get everything you want with probably what you're craving, a classic-looking or retro-looking bike, and it looks like an old-school Bonneville. Mm. And then you also get the... It is not far off the ability off-road of the likes of my Africa Twin. So if you really actually do want to go and take something off-road and do some scrambling, it has the chops to do that as well, which I really like. That engine's characterful as well. Loads of fun. It's not one that I got bored of. And it's got loads of tech spec on offer, actually, for an old-looking bike.
Big time, yeah. GoPro integration being probably like the one that you would think of as like, what's the most far removed feature of this bike from how it looks? The ability to set a GoPro running from the switch gear is pretty techy, I'd say.
Agreed, yeah. If it's got that, then they really have thrown everything else at it as well, tech-wise.
Yeah, for sure. And then number three?
Can you guess what the last one is?
Yes.
It comes from Italy and it's a Moto Guzzi V7. And I have owned one in the past. I've ridden them lots and it is always one that I get pulled to. And the reason I like that, if you've got your high-performing retro in the likes of the R9T, you've got your off-road retro that really can go off-road and has ground clearance in the Scrambler. And then you've got the V7. Now, I like cruisers. I've always liked cruisers, but the only one that I've owned close to it really was the V9. And obviously we've ridden loads of other cruisers as well. They're never one that I really realistically consider owning for myself because I know that it doesn't have everything that I want. For me, a V7 is close enough to a cruiser feel whilst still having the ability, you know, ground clearance, lean angle that you can get out of the likes of a Bonneville. And again, I've had some, you know, fast enough rides on it if you're with the right kind of pack.
Yeah.
And I just love it.
Yeah, it is good. I'll give you that. I only wind you up about it because I knew you had one. And
it's
easy to say it's like a bit of a tractor, isn't it? But actually, it's a really, really good bike. Yeah. Good shouts, all of them, mate.
Mm-hmm.
All bikes that I've thoroughly enjoyed. I didn't pick anything the same, though. I think the ones that kind of still stand out for me, I mean, firstly, for that old school feel and also the accessibility of the price is the Interceptor 650. I just think it's got the old school looks. It's got the air-cooled engine or air and oil-cooled.
Mm.
It has that versatility of a sort of upright standard retro bike. And then at just over $6,000, there's very few bikes in terms of value for money that can get close to it.
Yeah.
I just think the weird thing is as well, I've shot a video with it, but then I never had enough footage to upload anything meaningful. But I'm such a big fan of it. I need to get hold of one. It feels like not very timely to publish a review of it, but I want to revisit it at some point just because people comment quite often on other retro bikes saying, yeah, but what about the Interceptor? And it's like, yeah.
I'll put it out then.
I've ridden it. I've enjoyed it. I just didn't manage to get the video together. So I will revisit that one. But it's a cracking bike and it's
a good choice. And you would be very hard pushed to beat that value for money.
Yeah. I mean, base level, if you want a retro bike that feels relatively big, it's not the fastest, but for easy going, chilled out riding, it's fine.
What I like about that as well is that, you know, if you're the type that wants a retro bike as, say, a second bike or something, it's less of a commitment, isn't it? So if you've got your bike, say you've got something like an adventure bike and you want that little weekend toy to just pop out to the cafe and have a fun ride on because it still does ride well.
Totally.
Great choice.
Yeah, big time. Then I was thinking, what's the opposite end of the spectrum? Like, I want something fast and fun and highly spec'd. Things like the Speed Twin, but maybe I thought a bit obvious. I mean, probably if I had to just buy one, I'd be thinking about a Triumph Speed Twin. Seems like versatile and really good at everything and beautiful to look at. But if I was more thinking like something quicker than that and still banging value for money, it has to be the XSR 900, the most recent one. So I rode that last year on the launch in Tuscany, which admittedly was like enhanced the experience a little bit, has to be said.
Yeah.
But I still think having ridden the MT09 before, same bike, just with a body kit, and they've stretched it a bit. It's got a longer swing arm, so it's a bit more stable, sits a bit lower at the back. I think it's phenomenal in terms of everything that it does. Great handling, great suspension and brakes, great. The engine, the CP3, whether it's in the MT, the Tracer, this bike, one of the best engines on the market.
Yeah.
I can't think of anything that I don't like about it, apart from maybe the looks are what could be described as Marmite.
Yeah, and I think, I rode the original version, so the older version, the older look of the bike. And that is definitely not seeing the new one in the flesh, but just from actually, you know, pinups of them.
Yeah.
It's the older look that I am more drawn to. I think that the new shape doesn't quite do it for me.
Got it.
But, you know, the mechanics are still there. It's still the same. And it is a phenomenal bike. And similar to the R9T, where I'm like, I don't think I'd be faster on the likes of a Street Triple. It's my sort of benchmark for something that I've owned and, you know, have experience of. And the same is definitely true. I mean, it is a three-cylinder again. And it's, you know, in terms of capacity, sits between, say, a Street Triple and a Speed Triple even. So, a three-cylinder, high-performing. Good choice.
Thanks, mate. And then I also went down the same route as you, which was like trying to think of something off-roady. You know, I did think about the 1200 Scrambler, but then also, well, I think my final choice would be the Desert Sled, because the other things like off the more road-focused sides. If I want to choose something a bit off-roady, maybe I'll go for something a bit lighter than the Triumph, a bit simpler, a bit more closer to sort of enduro vibe. It feels a bit more maneuverable. And
yeah, that's embarrassing. I didn't remember the Desert Sled. Otherwise, you're quite right. If you're looking for a retro scrambler that actually, you know, that you would want to take off-road, it's a bit lighter, probably a bit more manageable.
The only other potential candidate here is the Fantic Caballero, you know?
Okay.
It's like plasticky. They make they make primarily enduro bikes and motocross bikes, I think, but they do a retro as well. Really yeah. nice. And then
I've always been curious of that.
It's good. But yeah. Previously it was a 125, a 250 and a 500, and they're all singles. Yeah. But for next year, they've bought the rights to the MT07 engine and they're making like a 700. It's kind of looks a bit chubby compared to the 500.
Yeah.
It doesn't look quite low.
The 500 looks kind of chubby, like comparatively to other bikes and stuff. I always think, you know, like the, in my mind, it draws me to the Rebel in that it's yeah. like quite a cartoony, chunky looking bike. And yeah, that's, it's a good choice though. We went out on the Royal Enfield day and one of the, instructors on the day, was riding one of them, weren't they? Or said that they do often. Yeah, no, it was in the lockup when we went and did the Royal Enfield.
Yeah, that was interesting.
And they actually do take that off road, so again, it can do it mildly.
Yeah, but yeah, I think the desert sled would be my pick just for kind of all round desirability. Looks cool.
It's a very good choice.
The only thing that's a potential spanner in the works is the fact that since they updated all the scramblers, I actually don't see it on the website anymore. So. Be a big surprise if they did discontinue it. So they've made some changes to the Icon and the other bikes, like lighter frame, and they've added TFT dash, and they've added riding modes and phone integration. So maybe it's just that they're going to release the desert sled with all of those kind of updates, but Surely. Wanted to space out the announcements because it's got such a big following anyway, the desert sled, that maybe it deserves some promotion in its own right. But
I would say my guess would be that they're holding their cards closer to their chest to create, like you say, maybe a bit more interest in it rather than just going, here are all of our new bikes in one go. Hopefully that's the case, because it sells well, it's a great bike. I'd be surprised if they didn't decide to continue that.
Or maybe it's one of those bikes though that everyone says they love, but actually maybe their sales volumes aren't that good. Who knows? Maybe. Yeah. But onto a bike that could be announced, or a pair of bikes that could be announced for 2023 that haven't. Well, I mean, I don't even know if they're real or not. There's just a couple of rumors of Honda using the 750 parallel twin that they developed for the Hornet and the Transalp adventure bike. You know, the mentality is always to push those bikes out into lots of different genres, push the platform out into lots of genres. It's cheap to do, and then you cover a lot of bases. Yes. And then, whether these are real or not, Tim, I don't know, but they're from Autobi in Japan. I think they're renders they've done themselves, but I'm not sure if they've seen a copyright or, you know, some kind of environmental agency filing that's kind of pushed them down this direction. But the idea is that potentially Honda might use that parallel twin to make a GB750 upright standard Bonneville style naked, and also maybe a CL750 scrambler retro style bike. Thoughts on them, Tim?
I think you're quite right in that, and especially I think with the Japanese manufacturers, the likes of Kawasaki and Yamaha especially, where they obviously put a lot of research and development into an engine and platform, and then give you different flavors of it, because of course there's everyone's got different tastes. So if you like the bike but you really can't get on board with modern looks, they've got a retro looking version for you. I'd be surprised if they didn't, because that is something that Honda do as well with their platforms.
Totally.
Like, you know, their 600 engine, how many different bikes were, you know, use a similar if differently tuned platform. So yeah, it would make sense to me if they went. I think the CL750 kind of makes sense in terms of, I think there is a gap in the market and it's different enough from the likes of the Hornet.
Yeah.
But you can probably explain a bit more about, you know, the type of the character of that engine, whether or not it's suited to, say, a scrambler type bike, which is generally a bit punchier.
Yeah, totally. I mean, I think riding the Hornet, it's such a revvy engine. They've designed it like that. They've made it more over square than a lot of the competition. So, you know, the bore is wider than the stroke is long, which means it's like a wide cylinder chamber dimensions, you know, and the idea behind that is to bias more towards high revvy power and less towards the torque, which is generally made by those kind of, longer stroke engines.
Yes.
So you do feel that when you get on the Hornet, it feels like a KTM or something. I think I've said that about a bike already. What was I talking about? The Harleys, the sort of V-twins. Well, this Hornet feels a lot like a 890, like a modern Revy, you know, parallel twin, rather than something like the Bonneville parallel twin that feels chuggy and gutsy down low. And so I was just wondering whether the engine feels appropriate, I suppose, for like a retro bike. The other thing is the sort of inertia, where if you look at the crank on like a Bonneville parallel twin, they've got them on display at the factory visitor experience in the Triumph factory in the UK. It's massive. The sort of beefiness of the crank is very apparent when you put it next to, I think they have the Tridents next to it, which is a Revy triple. So it's small, and it means that when you rev it, it goes up and down the revs really quickly. Whereas the Bonneville feels like weighty and it gives it that character and it feels substantial and sort of satisfying when you rev it, but it is like a slow, like broom, you know, like up and down the revs, and it sort of falls down slowly. Lots of inertia. The Hornet is definitely in that sort of, from what I could feel anyway, in that much lower inertia kind of vibe. And when you look at that GB750, it's a beautiful design they've come up with. I'm not sure if there's much foundations to it, but yeah, it just has me thinking maybe it doesn't quite fit, but it could work. I think
the engine probably works better in the GB if they do decide to do the GB. And it's not actually a moniker I'm kind of familiar with in the Honda range. I'm sure there's some precedent there for it. But I think for me, looks-wise, I'd probably want it to ape a bit more of the CB1100. That retro kind of look, I quite like that. I think if they did a 750 or a smaller capacity than the 1100 in that one, that'd be quite good. But maybe they don't need to. But curious. I like both of them. I like Honda. It isn't one that I've said this to you before, but they sometimes play it safe. So it's not one of those ones that I get really excited by. Even when the Hornet came out, and I owned a Hornet, and they teased, like, you know, there'd loads of little teases on Facebook, and it was for months, it feels like, when it sort of came out, of like going through the generations and like there's a new one coming, and I was sort of like, I was like, just show me it. I'm not really. It's not that big a tease. I knew I'd like it, but I knew that I wasn't, you know, super excited for it. But
we'll see, mate. It's all conjecture at this stage, but I think it makes sense they'd use that engine in more places. I agree, the GB looks kind of most interesting, so fingers crossed. I always like to see more bikes. I always like to see more retros specifically. We're both big fans of that genre, so more is good for sure. Speaking of which, they've just announced the pricing for Enfield's Super Meteor 650, and it looks really impressive. It looks so competitively priced, so £6,799. And it just looks, I mean, I don't know if you've seen it yet. Did we see it at any shows together?
In the flesh, no. I mean, obviously, I've seen plenty of videos over it. It is actually one that I was interested in. Excited might be overselling the point in that one, but I felt like I was waiting for that one for a while, because when the Interceptor 650 came out, it just made sense that at some point they would put in a cruiser. And I think they also teased, they made like a, custom,
I know the one you mean. The prototype.
You know the, prototype. Yeah. In, that green one, right? It was a few Eichmers ago.
Yeah. It looked phenomenal.
Oh, beautiful. And I was like, yeah, they're going to make themselves a bobber or, you know, a cruiser. It makes more sense. I mean, it's more usable than, say, a bobber. So that, you know, I was excited to see a cruiser come in. I like it a lot. And I think also for me, you probably agree, but it puts me in mind of the Triumph America or Speedmaster 900 that they don't do anymore. No. And I think that also means there is a gap in the market for that, unless you're going to go secondhand and try and pick up an older version of that. So, yeah, I'm excited to have a go on that one, actually. I'm very curious. I think that engine probably lends itself well to it.
I've always wanted one of those Bonneville Americas. I think they look super cool. I saw like a custom one online once, and it just got me in this sort of wormhole of eBay research. And then I kind of forgot about it until I started working more with Superbike Factory, where you just have a look around the showroom, and it does rekindle some old yearnings for specific bikes, which I've got to be cautious, I think, spending time there. But yeah, I think I saw the Super Meteor at EICMA, and it looks really impressive for the money. I that was the thing that was a shame. When I made a video about it at EICMA, I didn't have the price. So it's kind of like everything that you say about a bike, just from reviewing the specs and looking at it in the flesh, talking about the build quality, the power levels, the features.
Yes.
It really frustrates me when the price isn't, I'm sure there are reasons for it, and it's not specific to Enfield. Literally everybody does it. But there are a few manufacturers that just give you the price right away. And it's so much better when that happens, because it's the one piece of context that could make absolutely everything that you're saying either redundant, or maybe you're completely underselling it. I mean, you know, if it's things like the Hornet coming in at $6,999, that's phenomenal for what you get. And so, to have that context is
even
great.
Just to give you a ballpark would be handy, right? Even if they said it's not exactly this, but it's around this figure.
Most manufacturers, if you call the press guys, they'll say it's going to be roughly this, but we can't tell you. Like, we're hoping it'll be in this kind of area.
So you have to frame it in the, I think it will be this, you know, all things point towards it being roughly this amount. Yeah, it's a good price, I think. Yeah. I think what would you compare that to? What do you reckon for similar kind of money?
You can't get anything that looks as good as that. And that presumably, from what I've seen in the reviews and from what I know of riding the other Enfields, the engine's great. That's 650 parallel twin. It's not super powerful. No one's going to buy this bike to you know, do drag races or whatever. But, you know, I presumably if it's the same development team, you know, it's going to be a good bike. From what I saw of the build quality, it's beyond what I think I would expect at that price point. And I feel like Enfield have fully matured in terms of the finish looks great and the paintwork looked really good on it.
Yeah, it's like the older ones. My dad's got the Bullet and he actually got two of them. One's in a state of disrepair. But he can tell you how quickly the finish goes off on things like the wheels and, you know, bolts and nuts and things like that. But it really takes the shine off it when you look closely on it. And that's of the older generation of Enfield. And from my knowledge, from my experience of the newer ones, that's not as much there. They definitely have improved the, you know, the finish on the metals and in the bike in general.
Yeah.
And they only really have to exceed my expectations of that by, you know, a decent amount, which they have, you know, because you know it's going to be made to a price. You know there's a cost element to that. You just want it to be slightly better, you know, to exceed your expectations, even just a little bit. And Royal Enfields do for me now.
Yeah, I think so. And when you look at what else you could get for the money, the only two cruiser bikes that come to mind, having done a little bit of research on it, are the Vulcan S from Kawasaki, which is like... the engine, it's got that 180 parallel twin 650.
Yeah.
It's fine. It's a really like reliable, solid engine. Yeah, but I mean, a cruiser should stir your soul a bit.
It's a bit of a tractor, that one, isn't it? And I also don't think it looks that great compared.
It's sort of like a modern cruiser. I think that sort of stuff goes down a lot better in the States, where they sell a lot of the kind of... In fact, if you look at most Japanese manufacturers, they have, if you go on their US website, they have more cruisers available than we have here. And it's a good starter cruiser, let's say, learner friendly. But yeah, not, it's 500 quid more expensive than the Super Meteor. So I think personally, I'd be like happy to have that money in my pocket and something that I think is a bit more desirable, has a bit more character. And then the other one's the Rebel 500, which is something like 6199 or 6299. Again, it's got the 180 crank. It's a cool bike. Another great starter cruiser. Lots to like about it, but it puts into context just how good value for money the Meteor looks, doesn't it?
Definitely. Yeah. And also, I mean, Honda actually do good value for money in general anyway. So if it's beating the likes of Honda or Yamaha, don't have a dog in that fight. But... you know, if it is beating them, and generally speaking, they are the more affordable end of the spectrum, and it's even cheaper than that, then yeah, it's on to a winner.
Yeah, I'm very much looking forward to taking one for a spin. They've already launched it in India, so hopefully not too long. And I've seen some bikes are arriving in dealers already here, so yeah, it shouldn't be too long until we get a go on one. Plenty of exciting plans coming up. I'm going on the Diavel V4 launch.
Very nice.
Out in Dubai, which should be quite exciting. I'm really looking forward to riding that bike. Tim's yeah. going out and doing the CF Moto launch where they're letting you ride a whole bunch of their bikes, aren't they, in Spain?
Oh yeah, sexy CF Moto. Yeah, it's my first, so I'm looking forward to that. Yeah, definitely is a new experience. And we both said when we first saw CF Moto, I think it was 2021 Motorcycle Live, that was one of the ones that caught our eye as a new thing to look out for, because we both said, you know, good value for money, the bikes look pretty good, you don't know until you've ridden it. So definitely a curiosity for me.
They surprised me a lot, mate, with just how good the build quality looked on those as well. I think maybe that is a thing across the board, that some of the Asian produced bikes, like the quality now is getting pretty comparable. Then the fact that now they're making bikes for KTM. So the 790 Duke, 790 Adventure, produced by CF Moto in China, helps keep the price down. They're really competitively priced as well. If you have, they just put the price on the website the other day without doing much of a press release, but you can get a 790 Adventure now for like less than 10 grand. I think it might be 9999, which is, it looks well good. Yeah, it's a wicked bike. But, I mean, we'll see how the build is, you know.
Exactly. The build is going to be the key on that one, because, I mean, if it is a quality where I think I would genuinely consider buying it for myself, then that will probably be the first Chinese-built, or sorry, Chinese-built, but Chinese brand of motorcycle that I would genuinely consider.
As like, yeah, desirable rather than just competitive on price.
Yeah, because most of them, they're much smaller capacity than realistically I would want. And they're, and you know, the finish hasn't been great on some of them.
But you get to ride, I believe, the Nakeds, and there's a slightly retro one. There's an adventure bike. So you should get a proper good test. And I think like that's a question everyone wants to know, Tim, is legitimately, would you consider buying one? That's when we know we've kind of crossed a certain mark in terms of the quality of those bikes. So looking forward to hearing your report from there, our roving reporter. And then after that, I've got the Street Triple Launch Transalp CL500, and hopefully getting to ride the new Monster SP soon. That might be in the UK, so just pray for some good February weather.
I've seen that one stuff. I have seen that one in the flesh. That is one I would be curious of, for sure,
mate. I think it looks great, because it's close in price to the Street Fighter V4. It's like maybe a grand or two off. Like it would be very easy to justify that jump up to the Street Fighter. But I think, you know, the suspension and the braking and the tech and stuff are all pretty up to scratch. And the big difference is going to be the fact that the V2, sorry.
Right.
The big difference is the engine is like the Monster makes about 110, I think, whereas the Street Fighter V2 is more like 150.
Right.
And I actually think for most people, probably the Monster's a better buy for most UK roads riding.
Yeah.
So I really want to try them back to back.
Yeah. I mean, that's another bike that I've got a really big soft spot for, because my dad and my brother have both owned them and I've got extensive riding experience with them. And any chance I get when someone says the word Monster, my ears prick up and I'm like, oh yeah, I'll have a go on that. Thank you.
Yeah. They're, I don't know. Hopefully great bikes. I mean, like, I've tried the old ones, but to be honest, I haven't even tried the new Monster non-SP. So yeah, definitely one I want to get out on. Mm-hmm. So yeah, keep your eyes peeled, everybody. Thank you so much for listening. And you'll see our updates on my channel, Tim's channel, Rarify Road. Yeah. And we'll be back on here. We're going to be back more regularly with our refreshed enthusiasm for the new year. We're on a hot streak, because this is one episode and we're not going to let it stop.
So we've got 100% hit rate so far. Yeah. We are one for one.
Aside from the fact that I didn't record myself the first time I made this episode, and this is the second.
There you go. That's a insight into how the sausage is made. Yeah, yeah. I mean, you learn that at the end. I think it's better that we left it until the very end here. You stay on to the end.
You know what, as well, at the beginning when we were shooting this, I noticed we were saying, as I've already said, or we were talking earlier.
But I was trying to make it sound like it was, I told you it a week ago or a month ago, or yeah, there you go.
It's a scam, the whole thing. But next week, I'm going to record it perfectly first time, and then we won't have to masquerade as being spontaneous.
Yeah.
Anyway, thank you so much, everybody. And we'll catch you next time.
See you soon.